Thank you, Mr. President. Trial Chamber 1 of the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, composed of Judge Lett Kama presiding, Judge Lanette Espergren, and Judge Navanathan Pile is in session today, Friday, 2nd October 1998, to pronounce the sentence in the matter of the prosecutor versus John Paul Akayesu, case number ICTR94S. I'm obliged.
Good morning, Your Honors. Pierre Prosper on behalf of the Office of the Prosecutor. Thank you.
I now want to request the accused to come before the court and introduce himself. Can he please come before the court? You may be seated. Since you do not have counsel, please tell us who you are. Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Jean-Paul Akayesu. Thank you. As indicated by the registry, this morning the tribunal is meeting to render sentence in the matter of the prosecutor for the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda against Jean-Paul Akayesu. Sitting as trial chamber one, composed of Judge Leti Kama presiding, Judge Leonard Aspergren and Judge Navanathan Pile, considering that on 2nd September 1998, a judgment was rendered by this chamber in the matter of the prosecutor versus Jean-Paul Akayesu, considering that Jean-Paul Akayesu was convicted of genocide, crime against humanity, direct and public incitement to commit genocide, crime against humanity, torture, crime against humanity, rape, crime against humanity, other inhumane acts, and on three counts of crimes against humanity, murder. Considering the written brief dated 21 September 1998, filed by the prosecutor on the sentence and the points that she raised in support of the said brief at the pre-sentencing hearing on the 28th September 1998, considering also the oral submissions made by Jean-Paul Akayesu at the said hearing of 28 September 1998, after having expressly given up his right to be represented by counsel, considering Articles 22 and 27 of the Statute of the Tribunal, hereinafter the Tribunal, the Statute, and Rules 100 to 104 of the Rules of the Procedure and Evidence. The trial will now look at the applicable law and principles. Here we shall look at the applicable texts, namely Article 22 concerning sentencing, 101 of the rules concerning pre-sentencing procedure, Article 23 and Rule 101 of the rules concerning penalties, Article 26, enforcement of sentences, Rule 102 of the rules, status of the convicted person, Rule 103, placement of imprisonment, Article 27 of the statute, pardon or commutation of sentences, and finally, Rule 104 of the rules, supervision of imprisonment. Then the tribunal went into the consideration of the scale of sentences applicable to the accused found guilty of one of the crimes listed in Articles 2, 3, or 4 of the statute. Basically, the submission have been based on the decision of this trial chamber in the matter of Jean Kambanda. And we can summarize the following. Following the above, as noted from a reading of the above provisions on penalties, the only penalties that the tribunal can impose on an accused who pleads guilty or is convicted as such are prison terms up to and including life imprisonment pursuant in particular to Rule 101A of the rules, whose provisions apply to all crimes which fall within the jurisdiction of the tribunal, namely genocide, Article 2 of the statute, crimes against humanity, Article 3, and violations of Article 3 common to the Geneva Conventions and the additional protocol, Article 4. The statute of the tribunal excludes the forms of punishments such as death sentence, penalty of servitude, or a fine. Neither Article 23 or the statute nor Rule 101 of the rules determine any specific penalty for each of the crimes falling under the jurisdiction of the tribunal. The determination of sentences is left to the discretion of the chamber, which should take into account, apart from general practice regarding prison sentences in the Court of Rwanda, a number of other factors, in particular the gravity of the crime, the personal circumstances of the convicted person, the existence of any aggravating or mitigating circumstances, including the substantial cooperation by the convicted person before or after conviction. As the chamber stated concerning the sentencing in the matter of the prosecutor against John Kambanda, it seems more difficult for the chamber to rank the various crimes falling under the jurisdiction of the tribunal and thereby the sentence to be handed down. It seems more difficult for the chamber to rank genocide and crimes against humanity in terms of their respective gravity. The chamber held that crimes against humanity already punished by the Nuremberg and Tokyo tribunals, and genocide, a concept defined later, are crimes which particularly shock the collective conscience. Regarding the crime of genocide in particular, the preamble of the Genocide Convention recognizes that at all periods of history, genocide has inflicted great losses on humanity and reiterates the need for international cooperation to liberate humanity from this scourge. The crime of genocide is unique because it is of its element of dolus specialis, special intent, which requires that the crime be committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group as such, as stipulated in Article 2 of the statute. Hence, the chamber is of the opinion that genocide constitutes the crime of crimes and is therefore crucial in determination of the sentence. Concerning the crimes against humanity, as has been done in other jurisdictions, the chamber holds that such crimes are particularly shocking to the human conscience because they typify inhumane acts committed against civilians on a discriminatory basis. There is no argument that precisely on account of their extreme gravity, crimes against humanity and genocide must be punished appropriately. Article 27 of the Charter of the Nuremberg Tribunal empowered that tribunal, pursuant to Article 6C of the said charter, to sentence any accused found guilty of crimes against humanity to death or such other punishment as was deemed by it to be just. Rwanda, like all states which have incorporated crimes against humanity or genocide in their domestic legislation, has envisaged the most severe penalties in its criminal legislation for these crimes. The tribunal then went into the general principles regarding the determination of sentences. As indicated supra, in determining the sentence, the chamber must, among other things, have recourse to the general practice regarding prison sentences in courts in Rwanda, Article 23 of the statute, and Rule 101 of the rules. The chamber notes that it is logical that in the determination of sentence, it has recourse only to prison sentences applicable in Rwanda, to the exclusion of other sentences applicable in that country, including the death sentences. Since the statute and the rules provide that the tribunal cannot impose this cannot impose this one type of sentence. That said, the chamber raises the question as to whether the scale of sentences applicable in Rwanda is mandatory or whether it is to be used only as a reference. The chamber is of the opinion that such reference is but one of the factors that it has to take into account in determining sentences. Consequently, it holds that with regard to penalties applicable in Rwanda, the chamber notes that since the trials related to the events in 1994 began in that country, the death penalty and prison terms of up to life imprisonment have been passed on several occasions. However, the chamber has not been able to have information on the contents of these decisions, particularly their underlying reasons. There is a footnote, therefore, to that decision which was rendered. In, as has been said in a previous sentencing, when the crimes with which Akayesu is charged were committed, and the perpetrators of such crimes could indeed be charged before the appropriate Rwandan courts. Concerning sentences, the chamber must also bear in mind that the tribunal was established by the Security Council pursuant to Chapter 7 of the Charter of the United Nations within the context of the measures of the Council, was empowered to take under Article 39 of the said Charter to ensure that violations of international humanitarian law in Rwanda in 1994 were halted and effectively redressed. As required by the Charter in such cases, the Council noted that the situation in Rwanda constituted a threat to international peace and security. In Resolution 955 of 8 November 1994, which was passed by the Council in this connection, clearly indicates that the aim of the establishment of the tribunal was to prosecute and punish the perpetrators of the atrocities in Rwanda in such a way as to put an end to impunity and thereby to promote national reconciliation and the restoration of peace. It is therefore clear that the penalties imposed on the accused persons found guilty by the tribunal must be directed, on the one hand, at retribution of the said accused, who must see their crimes punished, and, on the other hand, at deterrence, namely dissuading for good those who will be tempted in future to perpetrate such atrocities by showing them that the international community was no longer ready to tolerate serious violations of international humanitarian law and human rights. The chamber recalls, however, that in the determination of sentences, it is required by Article 23 and Rule 101 of the rules to also take into account a number of factors, including the gravity of the offense, the individual circumstances of the accused, the existence of any aggravating or mitigating circumstances, including the substantial cooperation by the accused with the prosecutor before a guilty plea. It is a matter, as it were, of individualizing the penalty. Clearly, to the chamber, however, as far as the individualization of penalties is concerned, the judges cannot limit themselves to the factors mentioned in the statutes and the rules. Here again, their unfettered discretion to evaluate the facts and attendant circumstances should enable them to take into account any other factor that they deem pertinent. Similarly, the factors at issue in the statute and in the rules cannot be interpreted as having to be mandatorily cumulative in the determination of the sentence. Recalling these factors, the chamber would like to emphasize three of them in particular. These are the aggravating circumstances, individual circumstances of the accused, and the mitigating circumstances.
Then the chamber went on to consider issues of merit. Thus, having reviewed the principles set out above, the trial chamber proceeds to consider all relevant information submitted by both parties in order to determine an appropriate sentence in accordance with Rule 100 of the rules. In this connection, the chamber first of all dealt with the facts of the case. In rendering judgment on 2 September 1998 in the trial of Akayesu, Trial Chamber 1 found that it was established beyond a reasonable doubt that 1. Akayesu is individually criminally responsible for the killing of and causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the Tutsi group. 2. Akayesu aided and abetted acts of sexual violence by allowing them to take place on or near the premises of the Bureau Communal while he was present on the premises, and by facilitating the commission of these acts through his words of encouragement in other acts of sexual violence, which by virtue of his authority sent a clear signal of official tolerance for sexual violence, without which these acts of sexual violence would not have taken place. 3. On 19 April 1994, Akayesu addressed a meeting at Kisheshe and called on the population to fight against the accomplices of the Nkotanyi, knowing that his utterances would be understood by the people present to mean kill the Tutsi, and as a result thereof, widespread killing of Tutsi had commenced in Taba. 4. At this meeting in Kisheshe, Akayesu mentioned the name of Ephraim Karangwa, and later on that same day, the groups of people acting on the orders of Akayesu and in his presence destroyed Karangwa's house and Karangwa's mother's house and killed Karangwa's three brothers. 5. Akayesu is individually criminally responsible for the death of the 8 refugees from Runda who were killed in his presence by the Interahamwe acting on his orders. 6. Akayesu is individually criminally responsible for the killing of the 5 teachers who were killed by the Interahamwe and local population acting on his orders. Lastly, point 7, Akayesu is individually criminally responsible for the torture of victims U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. Now the chamber would now come on the pre-sentencing hearing that was held. During that hearing, in her brief, the prosecutor, in the main, argued that the crimes committed by Akayesu are of extreme gravity and that they deserve to be punished appropriately. The prosecutor was of opinion that the chamber should assess the personal role of Akayesu in the crimes as well as the attendant circumstances of those crimes. She recalled that Akayesu performed executive duties in Taba Commune, that he was responsible for the enforcement of laws and regulations as well as for the administration of justice, and that he also had absolute authority over the communal police. The prosecutor stated that in his opinion, the following aggravating circumstances may justify the heavy sentence that the chamber should inflict on Akayesu. 1. Akayesu was in a position of authority and had the duty to protect the population and ensure its security. 2. He betrayed the confidence that the population placed in him and used his power as bookmaster to commit the crimes. He also used the municipal police under his responsibility in the commission of the crimes. He thus abused his powers. 3. He was motivated by the intent to commit genocide and planned his acts consequently and thus acted with premeditation. 4. His criminal conduct was sustained and systematic and lasted for almost 3 months, becoming ever more intensive. Furthermore, the prosecutor submits that in his opinion, on the basis of the information available, there are no mitigating circumstances for Akayesu's conviction. With regard to the issue of multiple sentences which could be imposed on Akayesu, as envisaged by Rule 101C of the rules, the prosecutor sought or seeks separate sentences for each of the counts on which Akayesu was found guilty, but specified that the chamber could impose concurrent sentences for offenses arising from the same acts. In the opinion of the prosecutor, the chamber should impose a sentence for each of the offenses committed in order to reflect the gravity of each and every one of them and to properly assess the guilt of the accused. Finally, the prosecutor requests the following penalties for the crimes for which Akayesu was convicted. Count 1, genocide, he proposes life imprisonment. For count 3, he proposes life imprisonment, that is for the crimes against humanity, extermination. For count 4, the prosecutor proposes life imprisonment for direct and public incitement to commit genocide. For count 5, he proposes life imprisonment or a minimum term of 30 years for crimes against humanity, that is murder. For count 7, he proposes life imprisonment or a minimum term of 30 years imprisonment for crimes against humanity, murder. For count 9, he proposes life imprisonment or a minimum term of 30 years imprisonment for crimes against humanity, once again murder. For count 11, he proposes a minimum term of 25 years of imprisonment for crimes against humanity, torture. For count 13, he proposes life imprisonment for crimes against humanity, rape. For count 14, he proposes 10 years imprisonment for crimes against humanity, other inhumane acts. During the same hearing, that is the pre-sentencing hearing, Akayesu first of all told the chamber that although he was innocent of the crimes of which he was convicted, he nevertheless intended to submit to the chamber that convicted him the following mitigating circumstances which, according to him, argue in his favor. 1. Substantial evidence before the chamber during the trial show that he was opposed to the killings and violence. Akayesu argued that he even risked his own life in order to protect the population. He was pursued, and one of the policemen responsible for his protection was killed and another wounded. 2. As a self-styled small bookmaster, he had only 8 communal policemen at his disposal. Akayesu compared his very limited powers and resources to those of Major General Dallaire, commander of the United Nations Assistance Mission for Rwanda, UNAMI, who, during his appearance before the chamber, explained that even the international community itself was powerless in the face of the Rwandan tragedy. Akayesu submitted that he cooperated with the prosecutor and the tribunal in that he was available and disciplined and never obstructed the judicial process or attempted to evade it. Finally, Akayesu insisted on publicly expressing sympathy for all the victims of the tragic events which took place in Rwanda, be they Tutsi, Hutu, or Twa. He asked for the forgiveness of the people of Rwanda in general, and specifically of the people of the Taba commune, not because he felt he was guilty of the crimes with which he was charged, but because he regrets that he was not able to live up to his duty of protecting the population of Taba. Now, with regard to the personal situation of Jean-Paul Akayesu, the chamber notes that Jean-Paul Akayesu was born in 1953 in Mushe sector, Taba commune in Rwanda. He's married and a father of 5 children. He was a teacher and later on promoted to primary school inspector in Taba commune. In 1993, he was elected bookmaster of Taba. Trial Chamber 1 scrupulously examined all the factual evidence submitted by the two parties with regard to the determination of the penalty, and it gathers from there above that with regard to mitigating factors, the chamber notes that Akayesu was not a very high official in the governmental hierarchy in Rwanda and recognizes that his influence and power overcame or was not commensurate with the events of the time. Akayesu expressed sympathy for the many victims of the genocide and identified himself with the survivors of the events of 1994. Three, up to 18 April 1994, Akayesu, and this has been established, Akayesu made efforts to prevent massacres in Taba. Several prosecution witnesses, including Ephraim Karangwa, who was then an IPJ, Inspector of the Police Judiciary, testified that the killings in Taba would have started much earlier had it not been for Akayesu's efforts in preventing such killings. Lastly, the prosecutor has not proved that Akayesu had been previously convicted of any criminal charges. Now, with regard to aggravating factors, the chamber notes that on the one hand, following a meeting held at Gitarama on 18 April 1994 with senior government officials, including the then Prime Minister, Mr. Jean Kabanda, Akayesu consciously chose to participate in the systematic killings that followed in Taba. The chamber also notes, on the other hand, that without being a senior government official, his status as bookmaster made of Akayesu the most senior government personality in Taba, and in this capacity he was responsible for the protection of the population, and he failed in this mission. He publicly incited people to kill in Taba. He also ordered the killing of a number of persons, some of whom were killed in his presence, and he participated in the killings. He also cautioned and supported through his presence and acts the rape of many women at the Bureau Communal. The chamber, having weighed the circumstances, the aggravating circumstances against the mitigating circumstances, is of the opinion that the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating circumstances, especially as Jean-Paul Akayesu chose to participate in the genocide. The chamber is of the opinion that since that mitigating circumstances apply to the sentence, not to the gravity of the crimes. In this connection, the chamber shares the or follows the reasoning in the Jean Kabanda's case, and also made reference to the Edomo V case wherein the judgment was rendered by the ICTR Trial Chamber 1. I quote, "It must be observed, however, that mitigation of punishment does not in any sense of the word reduce the degree of the crime. It is more a matter of grace than of defense. In other words, the punishment assessed is not a proper criterion to be considered in evaluating the findings of the court with reference to the degree of magnitude of the crime," unquote. The degree of magnitude of the crimes is still an essential criterion. Is still an essential criterion for evaluation of sentence. A sentence must reflect the predominant standard of proportionality between the gravity of the offense and the degree of responsibility of the offender. Just sentences contribute to respect for the law and the maintenance of a just, peaceful, and safe society. Before delivering the verdict, the chamber wishes to serve notice on the prosecutor that under the provisions of Rule 101C of the rules, the tribunal may, depending on the case, that is where there are several counts on which is guilty, impose either a single sentence or multiple sentences with the understanding that in the latter case, the chamber shall decide whether such sentences should be served consecutively before the court. Trial Chamber 1. For the foregoing reasons, delivering its decision in public, inter partes, and in the first instance, pursuant to Articles 23, 26, and 27 of the Statute, and Rules 100-10 before the court. Trial Chamber 1, for the foregoing reasons, delivering its decision in public, inter partes, and in the first instance, pursuant to Articles 23, 26, and 27 of the Statute, and Rules 100, 101, 102, 103, and 104 of the Rules of Procedure and Evidence, noting the general practice of sentencing by the courts of Rwanda, noting that Akayesu was convicted on counts 1, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, and 14 of the indictment, in the judgment delivered by this chamber on 2nd September 1998, noting the brief submitted by the prosecutor, having heard the prosecutor and Akayesu in punishment of the above mentioned crimes, sentences Jean-Paul Akayesu, born in 1953 in Mureshe sector, Taba commune, Gitarama prefecture, Rwanda, for count one, life imprisonment for the crime of genocide. Count three of the indictment, life imprisonment for the crime, for crimes against humanity, extermination. Count four, life imprisonment for direct and public incitement to commit genocide. Count five, 15 years of imprisonment for crimes against humanity, murder. For count seven, 15 years of imprisonment for the crime, for crimes against humanity, murder. For count nine, 15 years of imprisonment for crimes against humanity, murder. For count 11, 10 years of imprisonment for crimes against humanity, torture. Count 13, 15 years imprisonment for crimes against humanity, rape. Count 14, 10 years of imprisonment for crimes against humanity, other inhumane acts. The chamber decides that the above sentences shall be served concurrently and therefore sentences Akayesu to a single sentence of life imprisonment. Rules that imprisonment shall be served in a state designated by the president of the tribunal in consultation with the trial chamber, and that the said designation shall be conveyed to the government of Rwanda and the designated state by the registrar. Rules that this judgment shall be enforced immediately, and that, however, until his transfer to the said place of imprisonment, Akayesu shall be kept in detention at the detention facility of the tribunal in Arusha. Upon notice of appeal, if any, the enforcement of the sentence shall be stayed until a decision has been rendered on the appeal, with the convicted person remaining nevertheless in detention. Done in Arusha, 2nd October 1998. The following have signed: Leyte Kama, presiding judge; Leyte Kama from Senegal; Leonard Aspergreen from Sweden, judge; and Mrs. Nevadatum Pillay from South Africa, judge. It is so decided. I will ask the accused now to withdraw. The proceedings are adjourned.